Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. On Monday, the Biden administration and Samsung Electronics announced a deal that will create a massive computer chip manufacturing cluster in Central Texas. The U.S. government is paying Samsung $6.4 billion to build this state-of-the-art manufacturing facility northeast of Austin in Taylor, Texas. And this is just one of several big computer manufacturing deals happening in different parts of the country. The Biden administration has made it a priority to bring this advanced computer chip manufacturing back to the United States. Well, why is that? How did computer chips get to be so important? And can the U.S. reclaim its lost crown as king of the chips? We're joined by Zachary A. Collier, professor in the Department of Management at Radford University. His research interests include risk analysis, decision analysis, with a special interest in the semiconductor supply chain. And Professor Collier, welcome to The Source.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
Tell me about these computer chips. Why so important?
Yeah, sure. So chips are in almost everything that we use on a daily basis, from our phones to our computers, even to our cars and things like washing machines. And that's just consumer applications. Chips are used in things like defense and healthcare and finance and all the AI applications that we're interested in these days are made possible through powerful and specialized chips. So chips are really the engine or sort of the brains underneath a lot of the things that we use today that are connected to the internet, that are digital, they all run on chips.
So not having access to chips would be a severe constraint on the economy. Is that a problem?
Yeah, that's a big problem. So as we saw during COVID, for example, when there were lockdowns throughout the world, the automotive industry had to shut down plants temporarily because they just didn't have enough chips to put into the new cars that are being manufactured. And so without chips that go into many of the products that we use, then we don't get those products that we want to buy.
Our phone lines are open. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Give us a call if you've got a question or a comment about the computer chips. We're told that we're in a computer chip cold war. What does that mean? Are you concerned? You can also send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. So, Zachary, what is this about, a computer chip cold war, a chip war? What is that?
Sure. So historically, just to back up a little bit, companies used to make their own chips. They used to design their chips and then manufacture them. But over the years, over the past several decades, a lot of the manufacturing steps have moved overseas, especially to Asia because of cost reasons. So the companies that oftentimes will design chips now outsource that manufacturing to other companies. Right now, in terms of manufacturing, the United States only manufactures about 12% of the world's chips, although we consume more than that. Depending on who you ask, it might be between a quarter or a third of the world's chips. So there's a supply and demand imbalance. So most of that chip manufacturing has gone to Asia, and especially in Taiwan is the world's leading manufacturer of advanced chips. And so the implications of that are that the U.S. is in a bit of a place of foreign dependence on these chips, which is a vulnerable position to be in, especially given the tense geopolitical relationships between China and Taiwan. A Chinese invasion of Taiwan, for instance, could have serious implications on the overall supply of chips to the world, as well as their security. And so that's why we need a trusted and assured end-to-end supply chain for these chips here in the United States.
Well, we have the passage from the Biden administration of the CHIPS and Science Act, and tens of billions of dollars are being poured into this act in order to bring companies like Samsung to Texas. Also, we're seeing companies in Phoenix, it's upstate New York, all sorts of places across the country. So this is a lot of money being poured directly into corporations. And that was one of the debates when this was before the Senate. Texas Senator Ted Cruz was opposed to passing the CHIPS Act. He voted against it because he said he thought it was bad public policy for the government to be handing over money directly to corporations. It should be a free market thing. So can you talk about that?
Sure. So without question, the free market is a powerful engine for building economic growth and prosperity. But at the same time, at the national level, lawmakers, they have to balance important goals like maintaining national security, which in this case is closely tied to things like manufacturing and supply chains and economic security. And so these are difficult trade-offs that during the policymaking process that our elected officials have to contend with as they balance these issues and draft and vote on legislation.
So the concern that having a government, I mean, like right now, $6.4 billion from the government going directly to Samsung to build this plant in Taylor, Texas. That's a lot of money, but you're saying that without it, then we're not going to be able to do this reshoring, which is necessary for job development and national security. So, so the free market question is, debatable.
Right. Well, so one of the issues with chip making is that it's so expensive to build and maintain these facilities. It does cost on the order of billions with a B of dollars to build these facilities and operate them. And other countries around the world heavily subsidize these facilities and their construction and operation. It's worth noting that in the CHIPS Act, some of the money is in terms of loans. It's not all in terms of grants. And so some of it eventually does get paid back. But again, it's about balancing sort of the security aspects with some of these other aspects. So going back to this scenario about, say, a Chinese invasion of Taiwan, right?
Or blockade.
Blockade. Well, so in that case, if there's a complete cutoff of the supply of chips, right? Like I said, we wouldn't be able to make many of the things that that we want to buy if the supply is turned off. Similarly, you have to consider the hardware security and trust of the components that are being integrated into the products that we use. So having them onshore is definitely a helpful thing.
All right, so let's take a break. Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or comment about silicon chips and the chip war, questions about whether or not we should be bringing this back to the United States, how this is important for job growth and national security, give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. It's a one-minute break, and we'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from La Fonda on Main, honoring the authentic cuisine of interior Mexico since 1932. Open for lunch, brunch, and dinner. More information at lafondaonmain.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about silicon chips, integrated chips, the stuff, the brains behind your smartphone and your crock pot, and what does it mean for national security that so many of the chips that we need in this country are not made in this country, and how the Biden administration is willing to spend tens of billions of dollars in order to change that. We're speaking with Zachary Collier, professor in the Department of Management at Radford University. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So, Zachary, help me understand, how big of a deal is this announcement? Put it in perspective for us, that they're going, that Samsung is going to be building this massive facility in Central Texas. They're going to be designing and manufacturing these chips.
Yeah, so it's a big deal. It is one of several in the last few months announcements of grants and other incentives that are being awarded to these companies through the CHIPS Act. And the one in Texas that you mentioned, Samsung, is slated to create around 21,000 new jobs, according to the Biden administration. Not all of those are going to be high-tech jobs in semiconductor manufacturing, but other types of things that are ancillary to that as well. So that's good for certainly the communities in Texas where these facilities will be located. It's worth noting also that besides just the manufacturing of the chips themselves, Samsung has announced that some of the investments are going to go towards R&D facilities, where they're going to research and develop new types of chips that are advanced, and as well as advanced packaging technologies, which is really an important step in a chip's life cycle. So when we talk about the manufacturing, we often are talking about the process of developing the wafers. Sometimes you might have seen the pictures of people holding up these circular disks with the chips on them, but they're not really chips as we think about them until they're sliced into different pieces and then encapsulated in a package with the wires and bonds and things that allow them to be integrated into systems. And so packaging is a really important step in the process as well. So this investment helps not just Texas, but also the greater ecosystem of chip manufacturing in the United States.
We hear about the need for innovation in this area. We've got Moore's Law, which has told us that there will be a constant doubling of the capacity for these computer chips. And I can't even, going back to the, not that long ago, thinking, well, how good can they make it? Can they keep up with Moore's Law, their prediction? And they have. It's astounding, the number of transistors, billions of them in each computer chip, and the transistor just being an on and off switch to help it, make these calculations. So the question is, like, do we have to innovate? We hear that all the time from these corporations in this field. So will these manufacturing facilities, like here in Texas, Taylor, Texas, is this going to be a leap forward? Will these be the next generation?
Yeah, well, certainly when we think about chips, they can kind of be broken up into a spectrum from cutting edge advanced chips. These are the ones that you're speaking about that are very small and have very many transistors inside of them. And then, and those are very important, but as well, there are older chips, the sort of legacy chips, they call them, that are bigger and have less transistors, but are still used in lots of applications. And we need chips along that whole spectrum. But to your point about innovation, it certainly is important to continue to push the boundaries of the technology to see what can be done in terms of the power and functionality of chips. We're seeing specialized chips, for instance, that are going into AI applications. And as more things are becoming digitized and connected to one another through the Internet of Things, and as your crock pot can talk to your microwave and your refrigerator and all those other applications, we're just going to need more and more chips to be able to make that happen. So, yeah, the innovation and the manufacturing, the whole ecosystem is really important.
We're also hearing about this is important for national security, national defense. How does the CHIPS Act, what we're seeing with Samsung, what does that mean for national defense?
Right. So In addition to these applications like our vehicles and, like our household appliances, the defense industry uses chips as well in many of the things that that they use for national defense. And so, just think about helicopters and submarines and all the rest. They also require very specialized chips that require high reliability and high quality. And so to be able to have that supply of chips for these important national defense applications is really important, where trust and security are paramount.
Let's go to a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, and we have James on the line. James, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. My question is, why did chip manufacturing go overseas in the first place? Was it because of the toxicity, toxins that they create, or was it because the educational base in America just wasn't up to par?
James, thank you for that question. Appreciate it. Zachary Collier.
Yeah, thanks for the question. There are a lot of reasons why over the decades the chips have been manufactured overseas. One of the key drivers, though, is really the cost factor. It's just ended up being much more cost effective to do a lot of these precision manufacturing applications in other countries, as various costs of labor and land and other things rose here versus didn't rise as fast in other places. The caller does bring up important points about environmental sustainability as well, the chip factories are very resource intensive. They use a lot of water, they use a lot of energy, and that certainly the cost of those things come into play as well when you're thinking about how to locate a site for a manufacturing plant.
Right, so that was a concern, how much water they use. And we don't have a lot of water in Texas, but they don't have a lot of water in Phoenix either, and that's where TSCM went. So I guess they can work with that, or they can reclaim a lot of that water?
Yeah, that's right. So it is true that they use some fantastic figure, like millions of gallons of water in these plants, but much of it can be cycled and recycled. It doesn't just go in and out, and so it can be sort of reprocessed through the system. But certainly, one of the big challenges in building a plant like this anywhere is access just to the infrastructure that is necessary to operate them.
And the energy concerns. I don't know if you heard about the Texas grid, but it ain't all that.
Yeah. Well, having a secure supply of power, having a secure constant supply of water, of other sorts of minerals and inputs is certainly going to be important. But, I think working with the municipalities, the states and the local jurisdictions, helping to get everything set up, the coordination between them is going to be really important for the successful building of these factories.
All right, so we're going to take a break here. We're also going to do some pledging to keep public radio strong. So, Zachary, if you could hang on for us. And when we come back, I want to talk about these jobs and what can people do in order to qualify for these jobs, what kind of jobs are going to be made available, how could this change Texas. And our phone lines will be open for that. We do welcome your calls, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. How Silicon Chips, national security, Texas, again, playing a major role in securing all that. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
I'm Judith Ghani. I am the owner and director of Ballet Arts School and the executive director of Alamo Arts Ballet Theater. And I am an enthusiastic supporter of Texas Public Radio. When I come out of the studio, having been there all day with children and music, I need to hear adults talking. So Not only are these adults talking, but they're talking about very interesting, important things. They're people who know what they're talking about. Research has gone into what they're saying. So I'm learning things. If we don't support Texas Public Radio, it will cease to exist. We all have to support what we love, what we care about, what is important in our lives. To find out how you can support Texas Public Radio, visit tpr.org today.
And this is the Texas Public Radio Spring Pledge Drive. The goal of the fund drive is to help remind you how important public radio is to you and that you listen to it every day. It's important to your friends and families and neighbors and all the folks around you, your fellow citizens, your community, and we need you to come together to support your public radio station. Public radio is a valued resource in economic terms. We call it a public good. But these things just don't pop out of the sky on their own, and they just don't maintain themselves. We actually have to ask you to do your part. You don't have to do a lot. You could be a very little, pledge $5 a month, and that would be great. We would appreciate that. You can do it right now by giving us a call at 800-622-8977, 800-622-8977, or you can go online to tpr.org, or you can use the handy-dandy TPR app. Now, joining me now in the studio is Liz.
All right. Thank you, Dave. I'm really excited to be here just to kind of talk about our current spring fundraising drive.
You know, a lot of people may not know who you are. Give me the full, the elevator pitch on who you are.
Yeah. So I'm relatively new to Texas Public Radio. I've been here about 5 months. I'm the multimedia fundraising manager. So my goal right now is just to help bring in the funds so that we can continue doing the work that we're doing and continue growing.
All right. And here we are.
Yeah, here we are. We're telling stories that matter, and we're connecting the facts and revealing truths that you, our listeners, need every single day on The Source. We're embracing forward progress towards a more connected world, and we're here for you every single day. Right now, we need you to be here for us. We need your support. So please make a contribution today. All donations are being matched dollar for dollar. You can make your contribution by calling 800-622-8977 or going to tpr.org and clicking that red donate button.
So we've been doing The Source now for 10 years and trying to gather the community, have an opportunity, a format for a civil dialogue, talk about sometimes controversial, sometimes fun topics. But it's important that people have an opportunity to be heard, to have their say. That's why we have the call-in show. Not every public radio station has one. And so we're so fortunate that we have the support of our community so that we can pull this off. It takes a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of hands on the wheel in order to bring you The Source every day. Kayla Padilla is our producer. Jesse is our board operator. He's a great guy. We need your support to keep public radio strong, to keep us going. Give us a call right now, 800-622-8977, 800-622-8977. We appreciate it.
And becoming a sustaining member it's super easy, and it creates double the impact right now if you contribute during our fundraising drive, because we're partnering with the American Red Cross. They will install fire alarms into the homes of family in need in our area for every new or upgraded sustaining membership. So not only will you be supporting Texas Public Radio and your gift will be matched, but you'll also be ensuring that one home is safer in our community with your gift. And we've made it easy to donate online, so just open your TPR app or go to tpr.org and click that donation button. You can fill it out, choose a thank you gift, hit submit, and then that's it. You're done. But it'll really, really help us continue providing this programming that you rely on each day.
And the number again is 800-622-8977, 800-622-8977.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th. Bringing together all sides with one important mission, protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me is Zachary Collier. He's a professor in the Department of Management at Radford University. He is specializing in looking at the management of the development of computer chips, integrated circuits, the things that are the brains behind everything that we use these days, from our cars to our phones and to many of our appliances at home to your refrigerator. What happens if the United States can't get the chips that we need? We saw what that looked like during the pandemic, and why this is now a national priority by the Biden administration to reshore the manufacturing of this for economic development and also for national security. If you've got a question or a comment, give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So Zachary Collier, we heard on Monday during the announcement that this is going to bring over 4,000 manufacturing jobs into the Central Texas region for this new Samsung campus. What kind of jobs are we looking at? And so you can build these factories, but you got to have the human capital, people who are trained in order to do this type of work. So that doesn't just happen by itself.
Yeah, right. So stepping back a minute, when we talk about jobs coming into a region, economists sometimes break those jobs down into different categories. So you think about any sort of manufacturing plant that is being built. There's so many people that will be actually working at that new plant. But then there are sort of, as you kind of expand outwards, there are these indirect jobs that are created. So the plant might need materials and other sorts of inputs, and there's people in those industries that might have new jobs that are created. And as more people come to a region, there are these other sort of follow-on effects, like there's just more people that'll be eating at restaurants, and so you need more waitresses and waiters and cooks and things, and you need real estate agents to sell houses and construction workers to build the houses. And so you get all of these sort of cumulative effects when we get these sort of announcements, and lots of jobs throughout different kinds of industries are created. Now, specifically about these high-tech jobs, right, that ranges anywhere from advanced electrical engineering types of jobs where people are designing these new advanced chips, as well as operating the machinery in the plants, which is say very complex and specialized and takes special skills. There are going to be administrative jobs, people to do the accounting and all the rest. And so it takes all types to run a big, complicated manufacturing facility like this. And so that's where the universities come into play. Developing education and special curriculum focused on chip making and chip design, the packaging and the whole life cycle of chip development is going to be really, really important. And you'll probably see lots of new programs and specializations, certificates, and things like that continue to pop up around the country as demand for these new jobs continues to grow.
When you were talking about how much growth and development that this would bring to the region, that was like as soon as people heard the news that this is coming and all these jobs, thousands and thousands of jobs that are coming because of this. And of course, there's the automatic initial euphoria. Wow, that's great. And then we think, oh no, more growth in this area. That's another story to tell. And you talk about the lack of water and everything else we have going on. This is like going to be like dropping a whole new city right on top of the Hill Country, which is already one of the fastest growing areas in the country. But that's another topic for another day. But when it comes to these highly specialized jobs in this field, people are saying that immigration is holding the United States back, that many of these people are specializing in this in Taiwan, in Japan, other parts of the world. And it would be great if we could bring those people here to do that work here and train other people here. But we've hit a problem with our immigration laws. Do you see that?
Yeah, well, I'm not really an expert in all the ins and outs of immigration laws and visas and things like that. But what I would say is that if you're trying to build an ecosystem of manufacturing and bring these things here domestically, part of that important ecosystem is the workforce. And that's why the CHIPS Act does have a focus on education and training as well. And so trying to get people, however we can find them, to work in these factories and work in these facilities is going to be really important. But I think that you're going to see more of a push towards training here in the States through our U.S. university systems, the college, community college systems, and so on, so that we have that that pipeline of talent that we'll have to work in these facilities.
And these facilities have clean rooms. These clean rooms are hundreds of times even more sterile than what you would find in the best operating rooms in the country. Why do they have such requirements for these clean rooms, people wearing these bunny suits for the advanced chip manufacturing?
Yeah, right. So the point of having these clean rooms and air purification systems, the bunny suits and things that you see, is to make sure that there aren't little particles and impurities that can get onto the chips and influence their functionality. So as we were talking about before, because these are so high-tech and precise, there's thousands and millions of transistors sometimes on these chips at the micro nano scale. Something like a little bit of dust can really affect the functionality of the chips. And so, again, that's why these special training knowledge about how to operate these machines and work in that sort of specialized environment is so important. We need more of these people that that can operate these machines and know how to operate in that environment, keep things clean and sterile, and it just makes everything work better when there's not those impurities and dust floating around.
So as the United States has developed this policy of reshoring and trying to build a supply chain that we can control, domestically, China is trying to do the same thing, but simultaneously, the United States has implemented some sanctions on what we're able to export to China, in terms of the development and of this manufacturing. So, I mean, people are seeing that as, you know, part of this Cold War that we're having with China with the development of advanced chip manufacturing. So, I mean, they're in a race or we're in a race also trying to get to quantum computing. Is all this kind of rolled up into geopolitical politics?
Yeah, right. So you're right. There are lots of different sanctions back and forth between the United States and China. The United States has prohibited certain types of chips from being sold to China, and China has put restrictions on certain elements and materials coming to the United States. And so there is some tension there. I think that just as electronics are important for us here in the United States, chips and semiconductors are important for everyone all around the world. And, I think lots of countries right now are realizing that chip manufacturing is an important piece of the global economy. So there are lots of other countries that are also investing in their own manufacturing capabilities. For instance, in Europe, the European countries are investing, and other Asian nations as well. So you see this across the board, that lots of nations are trying to figure out how to work domestically to build their own capacity, but also work with allies. So we talk about nearshoring and onshoring, but also friendshoring is a term that gets thrown around. that sort of implies that working with friendly nations is another way to boost capacity.
And we hear about the potential for foreign interference, like sabotage or Trojan horsing in chips that could be used for eavesdropping and otherwise. Has that actually happened? Do we know that, or is that just speculation?
Yeah, so when we talk about security of chips, we typically think about it along three different dimensions. So security researchers talk about confidentiality. That's sort of like maintaining the, confidentiality of the information flowing through the chips. Integrity, which is more about the functionality, making sure that they do what they're supposed to do and don't do what they're not supposed to do. And then availability is more about does the chip work? Do you have access to its functionality? And so there are things called Trojan horses, which can allow for remote access and other sorts of kill switches in chips that can affect their functionality. So it's a real concern.
All right, so we're going to take this break. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation with Zachary Collier, talking about silicon chips and national security. I want to ask you about, drones and other ways of weapons that the United States has, to how those chips could also be vulnerable to those things you just mentioned. Our number for your phone call is 833-877-8255 if you want to jump in the conversation, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Zachary Collier with us, professor of the Department of Management at Radford University, talking about silicon chips and national security. Recently we saw how these drones and missiles were being lobbed at Israel, and that the vast majority, almost entirely all of them, were being shot down. So to me, it seems like that was a demonstration that the superior technology will win in these new kinetic battles that we have in the ground. Hot wars will depend on who actually has the best computer chips. Is that an appropriate conclusion?
Yeah, definitely. As far as just military posture, having advanced technologies that your adversary doesn't have is certainly gives you a competitive advantage. So it's not just the economy and the things that we use on a day-to-day basis, but it's also very vital to national security.
And also as a deterrent.
Yeah, correct. And so when we look at defense applications or really any kind of critical applications, it could be, think about just airplanes and pacemakers, in healthcare and anything that you want to work correctly and over a certain period of time. You want high quality, reliable chips, and you want to make sure that they work the way that they're supposed to work. And so bringing, this chip making back on shore is one of the tools that policymakers are trying to use to ensure that we have that supply that we need for all of these really important applications.
So why did Taiwan become the place to go to have the chips made there? What was their competitive edge?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things between costs and technological abilities. There are a lot of forces over the several decades that shaped the global landscape of chip making around the world. Part of it is just sort of a de-verticalization of the industry as people specialized in various steps in the process rather than having all the steps in the process under their own control. But certainly, right now, TSMC in Taiwan is one of the, if not the, leading manufacturer of chips. And so companies design chips, but then companies like TSMC, which are the foundries, they actually do the manufacturing. And so we've seen just over the years that there's this sort of specialization that happens, and there's a lot of market forces and other types of sort of economic drivers for that. But the situation that we're in now is just that over the years, the U.S. Share of manufacturing has declined to about 12%. And while we see that other nations in Asia, their capacity has continued to increase. And so the goal of the CHIPS Act and these incentives is really to make sure that the U.S. Capacity relative to the world doesn't continue to decline, that we can actually maintain our position and even grow it on the world stage.
But if these are domestically manufactured, designed, advanced integrated circuit chips, is this also a way to defend against cyber warfare and other malicious purposes?
Yeah, I think that having that trusted and assured supply of chips, knowing where they've been across the supply chain, and having information about their provenance and traceability from the end, beginning end to the final use is certainly important for these security aspects, as well as the economic aspects. They're all intertwined in interesting ways.
So how will the U.S., what steps should be taken, what policies? And we're talking about public policy and then just investments and education. What needs to be done to maintain the technological edge in chip development and manufacturing?
Yeah, sure. So there's a lot of different things that can be done. In addition to the CHIPS Act, which we've been talking about, many states have been trying to attract chip making to their localities, including Texas, which I believe has passed their own chip legislation, kind of a mini version of the CHIPS Act, to provide additional incentives for companies to come to Texas. And so these sort of incentives certainly do help, but also private investment from these companies is a big part of the puzzle. So Samsung, I believe, is investing over $40 billion of their money to build these facilities in Texas. And so while the money from the government and the grants and loans are certainly important, it takes private investment as well.
Why so much money? Why is it so expensive to create one of these campuses?
Well, there's a long lead time on building them in general. So just the construction of these campuses, these are very large buildings. I think I saw that one of the ones in Texas is going to be 11 football fields. There's some sort of very large footprint. So they're big facilities. They have basically the sort of most high-tech manufacturing facilities that there are. Like we talked about, we're talking about nanoscale precision, very clean environments and things like that. So just the technology and the infrastructure, some of the machines that actually do the production themselves are quite sophisticated and cost a lot of money to run. So it's a very costly endeavor to run one of these manufacturing facilities.
Yeah, in Texas, we measure everything by football fields. That's, we can relate to that.
Right.
All right. So I want to thank you, Zachary Collier, for coming on board, helping us understand the importance of silicon chips in our economy and in our national defense, answering a lot of these tough questions, making this easy for our listeners. Appreciate it. Zachary Collier is a professor of the Department of Management at Radford University. Thank you again, Zachary.
Thanks, David, for having me.
And that's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're going to take a break, and we're going to do some pitching in just a second. Stay with us.
Hey, TPR listeners, I'm Aisha Roscoe. You know what keeps TPR up and running? It's support from listeners like you. Yes, you! Your membership supports everything you hear on TPR, including NPR's Weekend Edition. You hear interviews with newsmakers, entertainers, politicians, and more, all thanks to community financial support. If you haven't yet, please join TPR as a member today at tpr.org. That's tpr.org.
Hello, I'm Kevin Moore, owner of iFinancial, and I'm a proud supporter of Texas Public Radio. We have been listening to NPR, TPR for 30-plus years. And when we started to have children, it was the radio that was on in the house. It was the radio on in the car. And when my daughter was 6 years old, she went to a friend's house for a sleepover. And I picked her up the next morning. It was her very first sleepover. She got in the car. She was extraordinarily excited. She's telling me about all the things they had done that night, all the fun that they had. And then at the end, she said, I would really like a radio like Haley's. And I was thinking, some sort of princess theme or something of that nature. And she said, no, Haley's radio plays music. That's how important NPR and TPR is to our family that she came home with that.
Hi, this is Liz Kester with Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source, and this is our spring fundraising drive. We want to thank Ramon Perez for their support and the kind message that keep up the good work, journalism at its finest. We're so appreciative of your support, Ramon. I really want to mention our business memberships to our listeners right now. Business memberships are a good way to support TPR while getting your business or organization's names acknowledged once a week for a year. Your business will be included in the TPR directory, which includes detailed information about your business and how to reach you. TPR listeners like to support businesses that support TPR. I know we use it all the time here, the employees at TPR. Whenever we need a service, we go straight to that directory. The directory is promoted on the air, and it gets about 2,000 views every month. For $100 a month, you can become a business member in all 7 of our stations. This is what we call the all-in business membership. It gives you the opportunity to host a mix-it-up at your location, an event that's heavily promoted on the air and invites other business members to attend. About 70% of our listeners prefer to purchase products and services from public radio supporters. So if you're a business owner, consider becoming a business member. With our all-in business membership, you'll receive weekly on-air acknowledgments across all of our stations. Not only that, but you'll have the chance to host a Mix It Up in your area with weekly promotions on air and the opportunity to connect with other TPR business members. It's just a great option for us and for you.
All right. Thank you, Liz. If you want to call in, be pledge your support, become a business member, just become a normal kind of a guy member, that's cool too. The number is 800-622-8977, 800-622-8977. We just spent pretty much the hour talking about silicon chips and national security and why it's important for our economy. You know, I come up with these topics for The Source. I thought this was important. You know, people need to kind of know about this, get an idea. Well, what's happening nationally, what's happening locally. This is the future. What does San Antonio need to know? How do we take advantage of these trends? What's good for our economy? What's good for our kids? That's why we do these things, and your feedback is important. And when you call in, when you support Texas Public Radio, we can't do it without you. 800-622-8977 is the number to call make a member of Texas Public Radio. Thank you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.